This is a Slog Audio Caching Podcast, produced by Paul Connor Packy of St. Louis, Missouri. September 21, 2006. Episode number 40. Interview with Wayne Lunsford, a.k.a. Gadio, of Conway, Arkansas.
Hello everyone, this is Paul Connopacky, your host of the SLAGA Geocaching Podcast. I am a member of SLAGA, the St. Louis Area Geocachers Association. These podcast episodes consist of interviews with geocachers and sightseeing tours of geocaching events. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or download MP3 files directly from podcast.geostl.com. During the podcast, if you hear this sound, it means I am about to explain what you're going to hear next. If you hear this sound, it means there has been a break in the conversation or a change in physical location. These podcasts are published under the Creative Commons Non-Commercial, No Derivative License.
During my week-long caching trip in Arkansas, I stopped through Conway to meet up with Wayne Lunsford, a.k.a. Gadiel. He is a network administration manager at a college campus. I met him in his office on Thursday morning. After getting us both set up with the wireless microphones, we talked about his work, the Arkansas Geocachers Association, and the meaning of Toad Suck. Dwayne takes me on a tour of the server room, which was a thrill for a geek like me.
Wayne Lunsford, have a seat. I heard you had some rain and...
Yeah, the people in Clarksville were saying, oh, you gonna go and talk to Wayne?
Did you get to visit long with them?
Not a whole lot.
Did you have trouble finding a parking spot?
No. In fact, I parked over in Visitors.
Okay.
If that was okay.
I went out, after I told you the coordinates, I went out there and looked, and those were completely full.
Is this where you wanted to end up?
No. Just kind of ended up here by accident.
The chief of police welcomes geocaching. He said just let him know if there's anything he can do to help us. We've got on board with the Parks and Recreation Department as well. He's excited about geocaching. On a state level, in 2003, I don't know if you were aware, but the Arkansas State Park System developed a permit and a policy to allow geocaching in state parks. That has been great for us, you know, in the state, geocachers in the state, and it's also been great for them. In fact, they are to the point now where they list geocaching as one of the activities that you can do in Arkansas state parks. I think they've certainly enjoyed some benefits from geocaching. I'm also a member of the steering committee. Last week we were for the Arkansas Game and Fish as well, and they were very receptive. As soon as we finished with the meeting, the chairman said that he thought this seems like a great idea. He said this would be great to increase our, you know, public awareness of our lands and public use of those lands. Haven't heard any final word yet, but they were planning to pass that resolution and they're going to work with us to develop a policy, so it's moving forward.
Have you found any resistance?
There has been, of course there always is, some confusion about what geocaching is.
You would think by now everybody should know about it.
Yeah, you'd think, but, you know, there's people, especially law enforcement, you know, anybody, if you're working on that in your area, make sure that you contact the law enforcement people in your area, in your city or in your county or something, to let them know what geocaching is. Make sure all of your containers are labeled. That was one thing they told us immediately. Make sure that, you know, if we come across a container, we want to know what it is, and we want to know who to contact. So just put your contact information on there. If nothing else, just put that it's a geocache. They want to know what that is.
Well, for a policeman who doesn't know what geocaching is and they come upon an ammo box, there's going to be some bad PR there.
Have you guys had any problems in Missouri?
Not as many as you hear from other states. Our policy within the St. Louis County Parks is that you cannot put ammo box. You need to have like a clear Tupperware container, which is reasonable. I mean, that's an easy concession for the fact that we're allowed to put caches in any St. Louis County park then. Once a month, though, they do request that they be given a list of all the caches that we have placed through the website and through this database that I maintain. We have that list, so we can produce it and let them know if anybody wants to know which are the ones in my park
here's the list. Turnover in the St. Louis County Parks Department happens a lot as well, or rangers get moved from one area to another and they're not familiar with either with caching or where the caches are. By that once a month list and us also kind of self-policing ourselves, we've had a pretty good policy at the St. Louis County park level. City, it's on a one-by-one basis in the city parks. We haven't had much problem with there either. State parks, we need permits, and you can put them out for 1 year. They have some restrictions on how close they can be. The biggest problem we've had is with the conservation areas. Each person who runs a conservation area seems to manage it their own way. And if they don't want caches, they're going to make it hard or they're just going to say no.
Yeah, that's the problem we've run into as well. And it was a big step for us to get the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission on board because we were getting permission in some cases and we were not getting permission in other cases. And there was no clear-cut policy. And now I think we're working toward that. We're about to get that. There are only a few agencies left in Arkansas that we need to talk to. Probably be working on those eventually.
Now, outside of St. Louis County, and we're kind of focused in the St. Louis area because that's where most of our geocaches are in the Slaga group. City parks and other counties are just finding out about it, and we're realizing we have to approach them one by one and say, here are the benefits. It brings people to your area. It wasn't as far back as, I guess, a year and a half ago that one of the city parks, somebody came in and said, I don't want any caches. And then they just totally shut them down without any conversation at all. I think they're realizing as they see other people around, other cities around them embracing geocaching, they're looking kind of foolish.
And I think that's why that Arkansas State Parks, when they developed that policy and permit system, I think that opened some doors for us here. Land managers, they have to know the benefit that there is to them. They have to see that geocaching actually has a benefit. Obviously, the public awareness of the land is helpful in most public use lands like the state park system. I really would like to see our group get involved in some type of concerted effort for CETO events for those organizations, you know, on a regular basis so that they can actually see, hey, these are good people. They are concerned about the environment. They're not out here to wreak havoc on our land.
Yeah, tromp all over their rare flowers. We made an effort this year and last year to make sure that during the CETO period, we picked it one county park and one city park. The Arkansas group, how long has it been around and does it encompass?
We're a statewide organization. We also have members in surrounding states as well. Right now, our membership is pretty open.
No dues.
No dues. We are in the process right now of trying to get nonprofit status for our group. We've got some funds that are in the bank, and we're going to have to account for those pretty quickly. And we're trying to move forward with that. So there's lots of things that have to be done as far as developing some bylaws, getting a board of directors in place, you know, some things that you have to do to keep your nonprofit status. It's going to be a long road, I think.
So at this point, you don't have elected presidents, vice presidents, secretaries, or treasurers?
No, we have a steering committee. That's about the only leadership that we have. Pretty much an open, it's just basically an open forum right now.
I understand that you guys have been looking at MIGO as an example of how to, you know, move into that nonprofit status and create a geocaching organization with bylaws. And
you've got organizations at both ends of the spectrum. I think MIGO is probably at one end.
Well-oiled machine.
Yes, very organized, very structured. Mm-hmm. We're probably close to the middle, and then you've got some that are on the other end who, you know, may not even have a website.
Yeah, I think the Ozark people, they have a news group.
Yes, or
Kansas
a Yahoo
City
group,
people have a forum. They don't have a website or even an official group.
It's kind of been my philosophy from the beginning that, you know, the more organized you have, the more structured you are, and the better face you can present to the organizations that you're interacting with. That gives an air of legitimacy to the group and to geocaching in general. So, you know, I tend to kind of lean toward that. Not everybody's of that opinion, but that's kind of my philosophy.
I think what we've learned in Slaga is that even years ago in the beginning, we said, what do you want Slaga to be? And most people said, we want to be informal. In a way, it still is informal for those people who want the informal. Some people want the semi-formal, and a few people want it a little bit more formal. there are certain people who realize for that legitimacy, you want to have the nonprofit status. You want to be able to have a bank account. You want to be able to have your own printed letterhead that says, you know, SLAGA and have an address on it. We struggle with that, and there's always a few bad apples who want to just ruin the whole organization because it doesn't go the way that they want.
And I think that's probably a good way to approach it.
You don't force things on.
Exactly. And you want to listen to people, and you want to people to be happy. It's hard to keep everyone happy, and, well, I would say it's impossible to keep everyone happy. You want to meet the goals of the organization, and you want to be able to present an organized, structured, put a good face on geocaching for the state. And that's what we want to do at ArcGeo.
There have been a few times where we've had to remind people that you don't have to be a part of SLAGA to geocache in Missouri.
Yes, we have the same issues. People think that we're trying to take over geocaching, you know, as a sport or as an activity. That's okay. I mean, you can be a part of ArcGeo if you don't want to. There's no pressure here. But for those that do want to, we want to make something available that's, you know, something that they want to be a part of.
This is the first year where we actually voted online through email. We got a pretty good response. In the past, we've had a few organized events throughout the year, but one was a spring picnic where people were nominated, and then the fall picnic was you elected people at the fall picnic. That was a little bit too restrictive because we'd have the fall picnic somewhere an hour's drive from St. Louis, and people would complain, like, I'm going to vote, but, you know, I can't drive that far.
I mean, you want people that want to be involved. You want people that want to do the job. You don't want to just throw somebody in there. That's probably similar to what I see happening at our group. I'd like to see us get involved more with the education and maybe at events, you know, have a geocaching 101 and a, you know, how to go paperless 101 and 102. And
we're still working on something on a more regular basis, which is like a tune up and learn. Some of the people who've been geocaching for a while keep saying, why don't we have some session where we can learn how to find waypoints along a route? I mean, I hear that quite a bit since GSAC and geocaching.com have both given that ability.
I tried to do that before geocaching.com came along with their little tool. It was tough.
It was easy for me when I did a trip from St. Louis to where I grew up in Wisconsin, not far from Minneapolis, St. Paul, because we would drive from St. Louis to Kansas City up to Minneapolis. And it's kind of a 90-degree angle. Drew that route on MapSource and then saved that route and imported it into GSAC, well, it's like the PolyArc, whatever, filter. And then find caches within a half a mile of that. And there, sure enough, there it was. You and your family geocache. What are your geocaching names?
My wife is Orange Danish. My name is Gadiel. We don't have our daughter. Her name is not in our username, but we call her Lil One.
What's the meaning behind those?
Gadiel.
Do you regret it?
We thought about changing the name, and we were trying to come up with a name before, you know, geocaching.com put restrictions on that, where you can't change it now. I'm too late. It was what I was using for online games and stuff several years ago, and it's a biblical name that means God goes before me or something like that. And my wife, her nickname, Orange Danish, that came from those Pillsbury Orange Danishes that you buy at the store. She loves those things, so, you know, she just picked Orange Danish. So, yeah, there's not really a lot of story.
Are you still actively looking for caches? You haven't hit your
first
burnout yet?
No, we've never really hit our burnout because we never have been really active. I think we've got over 300 finds now, but we just don't cache that much. We always cache as a family. I don't even remember ever finding a cache that I didn't have my family with me, at least my wife.
To reserve that activity for the family.
For us, it's a family thing. We don't have a lot of free time, so we just don't go caching much. When we take a vacation or something, it's a caching vacation. So we'll drive to somewhere fairly rich in caches, and we'll spend 2 or 3 or 4 days just caching. So we may get 50 finds in a trip, and then we won't find another one for 3 months.
Mm.
So it's kind of sporadic.
You put some caches out yourself?
Mm-hmm. 10 or so probably active right now. I don't want to get too many because, as I said, we don't have time to maintain them, and I'm under the impression if you can't maintain your caches, you don't need to be placing that cache. It doesn't do the geocaching community any good, and it could actually do some harm. Most of ours are micros here in town that I can go to quickly and do maintenance. We have one in a state park at It's called Woolly Hollow State Park. It's just north of here. We have one puzzle cache that's actually here on campus. Kind of takes you on a tour of campus and then ends in an ammo box.
I looked that one up because I saw it was nearby. But I don't have time to do that one.
It's very involved. I mean, you're going to be investing at least probably an hour of walking around the campus. And plus, it's kind of divided up into a homework portion and then an in-class, what I call in-class portion, which is the walking around campus. But the homework portion, probably, it's just internet research. That part would probably take another 30 minutes or so. So it's pretty involved. Not many people find that.
Is there a geocaching awareness on the campus itself? Is there some type of any education that's going on?
No, not that I know of. I have talked to the geography department. You know, they do some geospatial stuff, and I've tried to get them involved with geocaching, but I haven't really had any.
No positive, like, oh yeah, tell us all about it. Let's come up with a new curriculum or something.
Now, if I could talk to the students, I'll bet I would get a more favorable response. I just don't think that's being made aware. Got lots of grand and great ideas for placing geocaches. I just haven't implemented them yet. I don't want to give anything away, but I've got several ideas that I'd like to incorporate. But I don't have time to do them. I usually end up just giving those ideas away to someone that I know has time and let them run with it.
You're in Conway, and some of the other people in the steering committee are in Clarksville, and somebody over in Fort Smith.
Uh-huh.
How do you guys communicate your coordination of events?
We talk online, usually. That's how most of it occurs, and we'll call each other. And for the meetings, our plan is to meet in a central location. The last time we met in Russellville, if we need to get together, you know, to talk about things. We're talking about using Skype, but we haven't really tried that yet.
I think I answered my own question, but I was going to ask you about toad suck tadpoles, but on my way here, I saw a sign that said toad suck.
Toad suck.
So there you go.
Yeah. We've got a cache in Toad Suck Park, and it's called Toad Suck Fun. Toad Suck is an annual festival thing that's held in Conway, in downtown Conway. They do arts and crafts. They have an automobile show. You know, they have rides, but it's growing and growing, and now it's becoming a big thing. People are coming from all over the nation to Toad Suck Days. And I think there is, I don't remember the website name, but anyway, it's been going on for several years. The story behind the name Toad Suck is the Arkansas River runs close to Conway. And there used to be a port on the river down there. There was a saloon or some type of an establishment where guys could stop in their boats and they could get off and get drinks. Much to the chagrin, by the way, of the local residents in the area, when they would talk about the guys, they would say, yeah, they suck on the bottle until they swell up like toads. And so Toad Suck came to be the name for that area. And then, so they thought that would be an appropriate name. So they've incorporated the frog, and, you know, it's just they have a toad master that leads he's the master of ceremonies. it's a hoot. I guess that's Conway's claim to fame, is Toad Suck Day.
Conway is also in a dry county. I'm not really familiar with the implications of that. How does that come about, or what does that really mean?
You know, I'm not sure because it's been confused lately. The residents of the county voted for it to be a dry county, which means you can't sell alcohol inside the county. But there apparently are some loopholes to that law, because there are some restaurants now in Conway that are selling alcoholic beverages. Quite a few people that are upset about that. Skirting the will of the people.
There's a lot of private clubs being opening.
Yeah, there are, and more every day. If you want, I can take you in to see our data facility and there kind of give you a quick tour.
I personally would love to see that.
Yeah. The IT department has most of this floor. This is our help desk. Now I'll take you into the secure area.
The dungeon.
This is our server room. We've probably got about 60 or so servers.
Do you mix and match vendors?
Buying from Dell right now, but we've got Compaq. Most of the new ones are Dell. We're getting a SAN in probably next month. It'll be our first one. We got these new racks in just a couple of days ago. This is our distribution
network. As you can see, the fiber coming in from all the buildings. We've got redundancy to each building on campus in another location.
You ever test your failover scenarios?
We've tested a few times. We've had some accidental tests, okay. And, and we've had some real time.
Unplanned emergency.
That's it. And so far, it's worked great. We support probably about 3,000 or 4,000 dorm users. We only have a couple thousand faculty, and we're now getting into some long-distance learning using video conferencing. This is our mainframe. We affectionately call this guy the shark. All the financial records and stuff are done on the mainframe.
What do you do to keep people, or maybe you don't, keep the students from downloading video from YouTube?
We don't.
Because that's going to be a big bandwidth sucker.
It is. And we have, you know, anytime there's any type of file sharing application, it uses whatever available bandwidth there is. Whatever we throw at them, they will fill it. We're developing methods to kind of keep a, you know, rate limit those things to some degree.
Is there certain times of the day during regular school hours where it's hit the hardest?
Yeah, it always gets worse at night. Of course, that's when everybody's in their dorm room and they're trying to avoid homework, so, you know, they're downloading movies and whatever else. In the future, we've got some software that we think will dramatically improve that situation. We keep a lid on it now, but it still infringes on the faculty and staff side of the network. To the point where it does degrade, you know.
Because you're all sharing the same pipe.
That's right.
If I'm a student and I bring a laptop, can I just plug it in somewhere and I'm connected? What do you do to protect your network?
In the dorm rooms, we provide an open internet connection to the room, inside the room. There are some other places that have wireless access. We have that in select areas like the common areas for the dorms, or places on campus where people gather. And most all of the buildings inside the building is wireless. To access the wireless network, you need to authenticate through our network. And we try not to have any open ports, actual wired ports open, where you can just plug into the network. Probably are a few around.
If they want to do online gaming, can they do that through ports?
Yeah. Most of the ports, the TCP ports and things that are needed for the games, most of those are open. There are some that we have blocked because they're known to be viruses used to spread. But most of the time, if the student will call and let us know, hey, I'm having trouble with this game, we usually try to accommodate them. We pretty much let them do what they want to do in their dorm room as long as it doesn't interfere with the integrity of the network.
Well, I suppose there's some budding hackers out there who would love to be able to use your network as their test bed.
Absolutely.
I think I heard my boss say last night that we have grown 40% in the last couple of years in staff alone, so we're struggling to find a place to put all those people.
So it's a 9-to-5? 40-hour week job?
8 to 4:30, yeah, 40 hours a week.
Are you on beeper support?
Yeah, 4:30, I go home and forget about it.
I'll probably do a few caches around here and then.
There's quite a few in Conway. They're kind of spread out a little bit, but if you have any trouble with it, if you can find a phone, give me a call. I'll try to help you. I found most of them, but not all of them. I was telling you, when we take a vacation, we drive to Clarksville a lot of times. We've spent many nights in Clarksville because every year they have a large event. I don't know if Max talked to you about it.
Yeah.
It's probably the largest Arkansas event. I mean, it is the Arkansas event.
It started out as a meet and greet and has grown since then.
Yeah, and it's grown. I don't remember how many they had last year, but it was a good number. And people are now coming from all over to it. He does a fantastic job with the organization of it. And every year they put out somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 new caches before the event or sometime before the event. And that place is just saturated with caches. Everywhere you go in Clarksville, there's a cache right there. And yeah, the quality is very good. You know, Max and his brother-in-law. And then there's another couple, RK Olympia, which you've met. Between those three, they have some fantastic caches. And
they put out series. They do series.
Yeah.
To bring you along the whole trail or along this loop or whatever.
We love caching there. I like micros anyway. You know, I probably am different than a lot of other cachers. But
well, you're the one who likes them.
I really enjoy their micros. Now, you went to Pack Rat Falls.
Yeah.
We did that one a couple of years ago, I guess now.
That's one of my favorites so far in the trip.
Wow, that was absolutely beautiful landscape up there. Treacherous, but it was worth the hype. I'm glad you got to come by Conway. I was hoping I'd get to see you on your way through. I was listening to some of your podcasts from your Arkansas trip.
And oh, the daily ones?
Man, I was listening to that one where you said you had to take cover under a rock, and you could hear the rain just, yeah. I mean, it was just literally
Yeah, that
pouring.
Was a day of rain. I mean, that was...
Oh, man. I was just laughing because you could just, I mean, I could just see you soaked with rain sitting there huddled under a rock.
Oh, it took like a day to dry out my fanny pack with all the stuff in it. The things you
that's
do.
That's good stuff. Yeah, that's good stuff.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.